Blog Talk Radio.
For now, if something is happening in your where you live, or
Wayne?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
All right, good evening, everyone. There's not much going on here, over here in Ohio right now. We're looking for...
Okay, maybe I just...
Go ahead.
Maybe I'll just play another song, okay? And then we'll try if...
All right. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you. Danielle. Hey, everyone. This is not Warren Blee. This is Philip Yenyo, American Indian Movement of Ohio Executive Director. And I'm going to fill in a little bit for Warren Blee and Vimber until they get here. So it's been an interesting couple of weeks here in Ohio. I want to touch base a little bit with these, what we call Wannabes, the wannabes. There's been some people of other cultures that they go to powwow and they seem to think they have the right to, participate in things that they really haven't earned the right to participate in. And this one lady in particular has been talked to kindly and lovingly. And, these ladies have tried to teach her. And she's wanting to do whatever she wants to do. And disrespecting the elder women, especially a head dancer. I think I mentioned this last week on the show. And it turns out this woman is now claiming that she's been threatened, which she was never threatened. And she has tried to seek out and was denied a order of protection, basically trying to get 3 to 4 of the elder women here in Ohio banned from going to powwows. Now, this woman, who is not Native at all, she's self-admitted French-Canadian Jewish woman, young woman, and it's been a crazy week. A crazy couple of weeks going back and forth with the women that are involved that have been accused of these things, to the point where these women have actually gone and filed their own order of protection against this woman. And lo and behold, what was denied to this woman was actually approved for the Native women. So now this woman is really upset that she can't go to powwows. She can't sell her Native jewelry that she claims that she sells, which is actually a violation of the Indian Arts and Crafts Act of 1978. She's been making her own jewelry and claiming it as Native jewelry. She's also been buying some jewelry. Some vendors have actually seen her website and saw their own work that this woman purchased and selling it as if she made these items. And that's a violation also. It's odd, that all these people like this just don't get it. They don't understand. They refuse to listen to elders who are trying to help them understand. And it's a really serious problem here in Ohio. Ohio is considered the donut hole of Indian country. And that's mainly because we don't have a reservation in this state. There's the way the Treaty of Greenville was written and the way certain people signed it. It was under coercion. Part of it is written as if to say that there were no natives here or in that area when the settlers came. And we all know that they were. So there's no no one to keep these people in check. And that and the laws here in the state of Ohio when it pertains to our people is just basically non-existent. I mean, we all know about the NAGPRA. The state of Ohio doesn't follow it, and we don't have the resources to go after them for, you know, property owners violating these burial sites. I think a lot of the laws in this country need to be changed when it comes to the sale and purchase of land. I think one of the biggest issues is that there be an actual assessment, historical assessment of what is on that land. And with technology, the technology that we have today in regards to LIDAR scanning actually show you what was there prior to anything else being there. It'll show you earthworks. It'll show you mounds that have partially eroded away. All these things, you know, are visible through LIDAR scanning. There's no need to actually start doing archaeological digs. And I think if people knew what was there prior to them purchasing the land and being told that this is a responsibility, you know, violating those areas is a federal offense, or even changing the law a little bit to say, you know, if you are a private property owner and you have these things on your site, you are required by federal law, by state law, to protect these sites. Therefore, you know, if you're a farmer, you plow around that area. You don't plow over it and knock down. There's been hundreds of thousands of burial mounds that have been absolutely destroyed because of farming. I saw a site a couple of years ago in Marietta, Ohio, as actually one of the very first places that there was a settlement. The settlers came in and they settled there. But they actually settled on a Native American village. And there are conical mounds and effigy mounds all around that whole city. And the thing that disturbed me the most was one conical mound that we were taken to be shown this conical mound pretty much in the middle of Marietta was a cemetery, and people upon themselves to have their family members buried around a conical mound. Now, who knows what was under the ground around that mound? Was it part of a complex that spanned more acreage? We don't know that because the town has now been all built up. Things have been tore up and destroyed, and these are the things that really hurt. And this is why we talk about land back. And this is why I talk about the treaties not being valid, because they were violated right after being signed, or the way in which they were presented and how people were, the people were coerced into signing these treaties. How they were given alcohol and gotten so drunk that they didn't know what they were signing. And the fact that at that time in Europe, there was something called King's Law. Now, King's Law specifically stated that both parties had to know and understand what was in the document. So you're taking two cultures that look at land ownership differently, we saw it, people saw it as a communal ownership, whereas Europeans saw it as private ownership, singular ownership. When you have two cultures that see things differently clashing like that, this is where a lot of the misunderstandings and the violence and the wars came from. Not only that, the doctrine of discovery also played into that part, where the doctrine of discovery, if you don't know what that is, you could look it up, explains that, if the people that are on the land are not Christian, then they have no ownership of the land, which is quite ridiculous considering our people were here for hundreds of thousands of years, in some areas for millennia prior to Europeans ever coming here. So how can you say that they have no ownership of the land just because they don't believe in your Jesus? They don't believe in the God that you believe in. It is quite ridiculous, in fact. So these are the things that are a serious problem here in Ohio, not just here in Ohio. This takes place all over this country. Sites being found and wrong dating on the sites. Another big problem that I've witnessed here lately are these Black Hebrew Israelites using the Olmec people as an excuse to say that, well, you're not the original Native Americans, we are. And this is a problem that stems from this out of Africa theory, because that's exactly what it is. It's a theory. It's not based in any actual fact. As a matter of fact, DNA records show that the out of Africa theory is just that. It's a BS theory, because according to DNA, it's not true. Not true at all. And I kind of wish my brother Noel was on right now, because he's been doing a lot of studying his own native background and doing a lot of studying with DNA research, what haplogroups are related to what haplogroups. And he's finding out more about himself also. So there's a lot of people that believe that the nations here are, come from the Turkish type peoples. How true that is, I don't understand a lot of the DNA stuff. But apparently my brother Noel, who is Choctaw, he's through DNA records, he's Choctaw. Not only that, through some Dawes roles or family members that were enrolled, but for some odd reason he didn't get enrolled. Actually, I know the reason. I just don't want to, put out his family business. I'll leave that up to him at some point. But it's hard trying to get people to understand and stay in their lane when it comes to indigenous ways. It's like we have to try to teach people how to be a good ally. And a lot of times when you're trying to teach them how to be a good ally, it goes in one ear and out the other. And this is where we end up with problems of people, coming to demonstrations or protests that we put on, that basically, they take over or try to co-opt a demonstration or organized speaking out about certain things. and I've actually had personal experiences of that down at the Cleveland baseball field when we were going fighting against the Cleveland Indians name and their mascot, Chief Wahoo, where people, that, you know, good-hearted people would come there, and then the next thing you know, they're trying to make it about an African-American issue. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You got it prior to, and they do it anyways. They, you know, you give them the megaphone so they can speak, and then they go off the rails and try to change what the demonstration is about to fit their narrative or to fit their causes or issues. And I've actually had to, you know, snatch a megaphone out of people's hands, like, hey, you know, that's not what this is about. They all of a sudden want to talk about police brutality and stuff. But, whoa, wait a minute, that's not what this is about. You're taking the focus off of what this is about, you know. You want to rally against police brutality, we can do that, you know, we can be part of that. But that's not what this particular demonstration is about. And then they get all upset and they get their feelings hurt. And it's like, well, apparently you didn't understand our feelings when we said, you know, this is what this is about. And, you know, we're going to stay strictly on this topic. And you went off the rails. It's there's a lot of issues with a lot of different people in this country and around the world that, you know, I just wish people would just open up their ears and hearts and their minds and take things to heart when you're being taught in a kind way. And a lot of times, you know, it's not possible. Other than that, you know, there's really not been much else going on. We have not heard here in Ohio about the Cohen. There was a site down in southern Ohio that this gentleman, Mr. Cohen, he's a orthopedic surgeon, was building a complex, and just so happens the land that he bought was on a complex where he's building this complex is also on a historical landmark. I mean, it's registered. It's been was talked about and it was surveyed hundreds of years ago when the settlers first start coming through, when the Western Reserve start coming through and doing surveys of the lands of Ohio and the Ohio River Valley. So all these things are there. And this is why I was talking about, you know, having a correct and actual assessment done, because had this man actually not lied and did have an assessment done, he would have found out that this was an ancient complex where part of the land is part of the ancient complex that's down there. As a matter of fact, there seems to be an earthworks. It's made to look like two hills on either side, two rows, and it's an actual trail going north and south. It's also known that this trail, which led from southern Ohio to northern Ohio, was actually a mastodon migrating trail, turned eventually into a state route. I'm not quite sure the number of the state route that it entails right now, but this along the sides of this ancient mastodon migration trail, there's been mastodon fossils found, skulls, teeth, parts of tusks. So, you know, the historic value of these sites should be preserved for everyone to enjoy. And with that being said, for everyone to respect, especially if they're native sites, respect in a spiritual way, you know. I know I've been on the show before talking about the incidents that take place down at Serpent Mound. Some of these things are still going on down there. I know one guy that he's actually Middle Eastern, who thinks he has the right to go down there and blowing on a conch shell at the tail end of Serpent Mound. And it's like he exposes to be so spiritual and everything, yet the way he talks to women, you know, on Facebook and stuff is quite degrading. So I don't know how spiritual this guy is. Now, I know what he claims, but he doesn't show it in action. So it's we're in a conundrum. And with the things going on in the political world and this illegal colonial occupation going on in the Western Hemisphere, you know, some of us are just sitting back. I know I myself sitting back watching this all unfold with these elections and these politicians acting like children, claiming to be leaders, and they're just petty fools. And it's probably not just here. This seems to be happening all over this world, in various countries. The people that are chosen to be the leaders are not worthy of that title, not worthy of the role, because they're more looking out for themselves and their own financial gains instead of looking out for everyone else. I think for myself, I think that's what makes a good leader, is somebody that's selfless, that does the work for the people. And they don't care if they get recognized or what have you. And a lot of those people, they don't aspire to be, you know, a mayor or a governor, or, you know, because they're too busy doing the work on the ground, boots on the ground, working with the people face to face, not sitting behind a desk. I think it's where a lot of these politicians, they go off the rails, because they forget what it's like. They forget what it's like to struggle. It's maddening at times. And you sit and wonder, or at least I do, I sit and wonder, when is this craziness going to end, and how, you know, is my family going to be affected by these people wanting to wage war on everybody? It's nuts. It's absolute lunacy what's going on. And I know I wasn't prepared for this tonight, and I know I probably sound like I'm talking in circles, but these are some just random thoughts that are going on in my head lately. As I stand here and talk with you, I'm looking at my son passed out on the couch. We had dinner late, and now he's in a food coma probably for the rest of the night. But it's funny, because we were watching a movie, and all of a sudden he just rolled over. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm going to go to sleep." So, I know, you know, here my thoughts and prayers and that go out to all those that are at and were able to go to or have already been to Sundance. Unfortunately, I'm not able to make it to Sundance this year. I wish I could. But we don't have Sundance here in Ohio. There's been it's been stated by one of the Sundance leaders, one of the well-respected elders, Avril Looking Horse, had come out a couple years ago and said no Lakota ceremony should be taking place east of the Mississippi River. And, you know, got to respect an elder. So we we try to keep check on, you know, make sure, you know, those things are not taking place. So, you know, when I go to Sweat Lodge, I have to travel pretty far to go to Sweat Lodge, or go to Sundance Ceremony, rather. And another thing that I think Land Back would help out with, too, especially a lot of the communities that don't have reservations or are limited, a lot of times it's due to financial means, you know, not being able to purchase land or not having enough land to do certain things. Here in Ohio, if you don't have land, you can't do like a Sweat Lodge ceremony. It's a little hard to do in the inner city to have a Sweat Lodge, to set it up the right way. And you know, there's ordinances on building bonfires and all this craziness that goes on, these European laws that are enacted here. It makes it very difficult. And then you have, you know, county park systems that don't allow you to harvest or forage, or you're not allowed to take rocks out of the river, things like that. And that does happen here in Ohio. And if you don't have property where there's a nice river or stream rolling through it that has the right kind of stones, you're just out of luck. Yeah, good luck practicing your spiritual beliefs, because we don't allow you to take rocks out of the river in the Metro Park system. Kind of garbage. So see, even today, even with the Native American Freedom of Religion Act in 1978, people still, you know, cities and states and counties and park districts, they still violate our rights, our spiritual rights. It's hard walking two roads, and you're trying to be a spiritual person, and when you can't practice your spiritual beliefs because of some city ordinance, it makes it difficult trying to find somebody to let you use some land, you know, or a property owner that says, yeah, hey, you know, you can go ahead and build a Sweat Lodge back here and do your prayer ceremony. You know, they don't want, a lot of people don't want a bunch of strangers on their land. Sometimes because of insurance purposes, you know, that somebody gets injured, you know, they're liable. But that's where we are at. Now, I don't know where all of you are at, where all of you are from, or what your experiences like this are. Christians don't have to worry about this stuff. They have a building, you know, that they go to. But these are things that we have to worry about. You know, well, when are we going to set up lodge? Where are we going to set it up? You know, are people going to come to it? If they don't, they don't. But, you know, it's, like I said, it's hard walking two worlds. It's hard raising children while you're walking two worlds, because you want your children to know what their culture is. And a lot of times it's difficult because of the society that's in power, in control, doesn't allow it, doesn't look, they frown down on it. And that shouldn't be. I think everybody should be proud of who they are and their culture. But when it comes to our people, it's we get ignored, we get pushed to the side. It's not really conducive to trying to raise your children in a respectful way. I think maybe even across cultural borders, respect for elders has gone to the wayside. At least that's what I've seen. The youth nowadays, they just don't they don't respect our wisdom. They don't respect the years that we've lived to have that experience to be able to teach them from. And for our people, it really doesn't help the fact that these church-run boarding schools that killed so many children and beat their culture and their language out of them. You know, those parents, you know, those people that become parents, and they've lost that knowledge that they would have grown up with their entire life. So it's hard for them to understand and realize, you know, what it means to be Native, what you know, how their sacred ways of living. It's really difficult. So I'm actually going to check out the live chat because I haven't seen. Oh, how you doing, Wayne? Good to see you on live chat. Yeah, hey, you're right. The Dr. Cohen in Chillicothe. Yeah,
that's so. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, that's him. He's over in Chillicothe. You know, a lot of those mounds over in southern Ohio have been vandalized, so there's not much we can do. And if we make a complaint on it, I don't know if the FBI is going to do much work on it. So,
yeah,
you know, and just...
They seem to have their hands tied and, somebody's calling in.
Yeah, what's this?
There's two ringy dingies. Did somebody pick up?
Yeah, somebody's calling in. I don't know who that is.
Me neither.
Oh.
So how have you been doing down there? What have you seen down there?
Oh, wrong show, huh?
Oh, no.
No,
we're
you're
waiting
on.
For the
okay.
We're
hey,
waiting
welcome.
For the Wombly show to start.
Absolutely.
Oh, John's on, too. Hey, John Davis, how you doing? Good to see you in the chat.
So what's going on?
Well, we're just waiting for you and Bimber, you know.
Well, let me do a little explaining since I owe an explanation.
Oh, no, you don't.
Well,
but go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, go helping somebody out, and it turned into a mess, you know. So I'm stuck on the road helping people out, and I can't get back. I couldn't get back over there, and I'm still over here. I'm in Parma,
wow.
Leon, you know, and actually I was pulling a trailer house. You know, and I was since this afternoon, and only 20 something miles, and ran into a bunch of serious problems.
Oh wow!
You know?
mechanical
no.
problems.
Well, the main problems, you know, like when you do this stuff, it's like when you haul a trailer house, there's supposed to be nothing in them. because the axles and wheels are only meant to pull from the manufacturer to the home site.
Right.
But people sink their 18-wheelers, and they ask you to move their trailer house, and they have all their property and everything in it, you know? And you know, I asked them, and they're, oh, no, everything's cool, and you know, trying to help them out. But anyway, it turned into everything they said wasn't true, and they didn't put air in the tires, so we just started having flats. And next thing you know, we started running, and we broke a whole axle. So, so now we're blocking the damn road, I'm telling you.
Wow.
And we got people out there, you know. So I'm glad you guys are taking over tonight. And I hope you...
Well, you know, you know, I just want to state, let everybody know. You see, everyone, this is what we talk about being of service to people. You know, and that's one of the things that Wombly doesn't, he doesn't toot his own horn, you know. But these are the things that we do for each other, you know.
We
come up with problems and issues and things that delay us in helping, but we're out there doing it. I mean, it's...
Yeah, so anyway, I was going to say, if you guys can take this over, because it looks like they got something taken care of, so I'm going to have to hang up a little bit, but see what we can do here. And, I'll check back in, and you guys, you know, I hope you guys discuss some, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world and that affect our Indian people and affect general people, you know, anybody, everybody. This government, the government is only for the rich. They don't care about the poor. I mean, it don't matter even if you're white. There's white people that are suffering because they were taught not to know better about their government. They support their government, but their government's barely hanging in there. And their government is the one brainwashing them into thinking they're special, and they're not. They became the enemy of the world, you know. So, you know, and they're bullying China, bullying Russia, bullying everybody, and they can't even have a ride to the space station, you know. So anyway, I'm gonna let you guys go, but to all listeners out there, you know, I'm glad that my bros and everybody took over tonight. You know, I didn't mean to, didn't know we were going to do this, but, you know, time comes. Sometimes someone else, there's going to be changes, and this is one of them. So, Doksha Ke.
Doksha Ke.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, go on, Philip.
Okay, so what do you got going on down there, Wayne?
Yeah, I was listening on to the Western Tribe of the Cherokee Nation. You know, we're speaking about the government, you know, and I was doing some research myself, and the principal chief down there in Oklahoma, or in the Western Tribe of the of our people, he brought up an interesting point too. You know, looking back at the Treaty of Ekota in 1835, the treaty based on the United States and the Cherokee Nation, and they signed the Treaty of Ekota, and it's based for having the Cherokee Nation shall be delegated to the House of Representatives in our colonial government, and so far, for like 187 years, almost 200 years, if you look at it, we've been denied a seat in the federal government, you know, and, you know, this is even after the treaty, you know, forcibly removed our Cherokee brothers and sisters of our actual homeland, and one quarter of our people actually perish on the Trail of Tears itself. You know, that same document guaranteed a tribe delegate to Congress. Now, if you look at it now, the House of Representatives to this day has failed to act on tribes. They have not honored this treaty at all. You know, and it's about time. So you can also go to CherokeeDelegate.com. Chief Hoskins, he's the one who mentioned about this earlier. You know, just the background on it today, you know. And the Treaty of New Ekota remains binding for the United States and the Cherokee Nation today, back in 1835. And, you know, strictly the Article 7 states, Cherokee Nation shall be entitled to a delegate of the House of Representatives. You know, this treaty right, you know, its purpose is for the Cherokee Nation itself. You know, the federal government threw us on a reservation, you know, which pretty much pushed us out of Ohio, pushed us out of everywhere, pushed us down south all the way on to Oklahoma. You know, this bound treaty was even mentioned in 2002 through Public Law 107-3331. Excuse me, that's Public Law 107-331. Congress said that the Cherokee Nation has maintained a continuous relationship, government-to-government relationship with the United States since the earliest years of the Union. You know, and it's about time. After 187 years, we need to put someone back to represent the Cherokee Nation, whether it's the Western Tribe, which is pretty much the main part of it, but the Eastern Tribe. All the tribes should have a delegate to Congress, I personally think so, but the Cherokee Nation, you know, hopefully it'll start there.
Well, because, I believe that every single nation should have a delegate in the U.N.
Yeah. I don't mean to cut you there, but if you look at other countries too, for example, if you go to Norway, the Sami people, which, you know, they're indigenous of that land, you know, they take care of all the reindeer. They even have representation in their parliament in Norway and Sweden. You know, they channel all the way through parts of Russia, I believe. But, you know, specific in the northern peninsula of Europe, for example, Norway, Sweden, the Kingdom of Sweden, have an actual representation as an indigenous unit. You know, that speaks volumes, you know, of trying to work together, okay? But here in the United States, you know, after illegal land occupation, throwing us on reservations, and not giving us a fair shake, you know, we don't even have a voice. It's like they want us washed away.
Right.
Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, I'm listening to you. What you're trying to get out there?
Yeah, hopefully everyone will probably go, you know, if there's any members listening in from the Cherokee Nation, whether you know you're from Oklahoma or you're from Eastern Band over in North Carolina, hopefully you visit the website itself or just take a look at it. And you know, it's about time we all start getting together and start working on this as a whole, you know, and it gives you a link too, where you could, yeah, you can actually email your congressman. I've already sent my email out to him, asking for a delegate for the Cherokee Nation itself, representative in Congress, you know, because, you know, if now, and I want to take, for example, the Eastern Band or, you know, whether it's the Lakota Nation or what, you know, we're our own separate nations if we're on a reservation itself. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, we're left with this model of government, you know, which actually put us in our situation to begin with. So now we're copying this form of government, you know, which is actually, you know, just like the political system we see now, you know, Wamba just mentioned, of course, you know, we have our leaders, they're bullying other countries. Well, you know, that's the same type of government model, which our leaders and even in our own tribes try to even bully their own people, which shouldn't be at all. But, you know, if you think about it and you move forward, you know, we used to have our own independent nation. You know, we used to have our own chiefs and whatnot before, you know, 1492 and, you know, before the colonials arrived. You know, as they steadily settled in, we were wiped away with, you know, various disease, war crimes, you know, illegal acts, inhumane acts, smallpox. And, you know, now we're set with this new form of government, which we're copying their government, the colonial government. And, again, we're moving forward here throughout time. And if you think about it, you know, no one's going to bail us out. No one's going to help us. No one's going to bail us out. It's just us. However, we're trying to find an avenue to work with them. But at the same time, they're the same people who are trying to take advantage of us and take our land continuously. Again,
well,
there's nothing
like,
here in Ohio.
Like, yeah, this is like what I was saying several weeks ago about, you know, when I addressed, you know, our listeners from around the world, you know, that the United States, you know, keeps talking about other people's human rights violations and stuff, and they're a bunch of hypocrites. And you know, talk to your officials and throw it in their face. You know, have your officials throw it in the United States' face. Don't sit here and try to preach to us about our human rights violations when you're continuing to do it. You do it to this day to the indigenous people. You don't even have the balls to sign the UN doctrine on indigenous peoples. You know, so who the hell are you to dictate or sit there and shake your finger at us? You know, it's called out on their BS. So when you call them out on their BS, in public, in the press, in the media, I'd love to see that on any of these news channels. You know, to have a leader of another country just come flat out and say it. You know, don't tell us when you haven't even dealt with your own situation and dealt with your original sin. You know, that's another thing too. You keep hearing this, oh, the. And it really pissed me off when Biden come up with this, their original sin, you know, the enslavement of black people. Wait a minute. Let's roll this back here, because your original sin didn't start with slavery, pal. Your original sin started when you came here and started massacring our people to take over the land. You know, you're an illegal colonial occupation. You're not even a government. You know, and that's what a lot of people should, other countries, other European countries are responsible for it. So we actually should be pointing the finger at them. You know, we should be pointing our finger at Spain. We should be pointing our finger at France, you know, and all these other countries that sent people over here. You are responsible for this. You are responsible for the plight of our people because you sent your douchebags over here and they started killing people to take our land, to take our resources. And now we're in a situation now where it's like, you know, and a lot of the treaties even state that they're only leasing the land. Well, if they're only leasing the land and they only have lease for 1 foot underground, anybody with a basement is in violation of that lease. You know, they don't understand that, you know, that the only reason why the United States was seen as a country is because in order to be seen as a country, you have to make treaties with the indigenous people. But how could those treaties be valid if they were violated? So all these other countries are recognizing the United States as a country. This is before the Revolutionary War and that.
they're being seen as a country because they're making treaties with our people and nations, and they're violating them. So the treaty isn't valid. So why are you even recognizing the United States as a government, as a country? They've never upheld their end of the treaties. And even the Constitution says, and I kind of shocked some family members on the 4th of July when I was talking about this. I said, you know, the fact of the matter is this, and what people don't even realize is we talk, you know, you hear Americans talking about, oh, the Constitution is the law of the land, blah, 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 all this other bull crap. Well, read your Constitution, because in that Constitution it specifically states that the supreme law of the land are the treaties with the indigenous people. So the Constitution of the United States is not the supreme law of the land. The supreme law of the land is your agreement with us. So we actually, in fact, should have the right to throw your asses off of here, off the Western Hemisphere that you've signed treaties with. The nations that you signed treaties with should have the right to tell you to get the F out. Get out. You don't belong here. You violated your word. This is the supreme law of the land. Now you can take your people and get off of our land. But that's never going to happen. It's too many people, too much mazaska going around. But by all rights, we shouldn't have to pay for any utilities. These are our resources. You're just refining them and providing them. There should be no indigenous person on this continent that has to pay for lights or natural gas. None. We shouldn't even be paying for fuel for our vehicles. That all should be free. It's our resources. You dug deeper than 1 foot under the ground. You violated the treaty. That belongs to us. Plain and simple. I mean, tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong, but you know, this is just the way I see things. Hello?
You're not wrong at all. Yeah, hello? You're not wrong at all.
I'm waiting for a response back.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong at all, man. And, you know, it's just, you know, they're not just an invasive species we're talking about. They're also a mutating virus.
You know, and I thought, too, the treaties were also insured us our education. They insured us education. If that's the case, then there shouldn't be any indigenous person that's paying for college. It doesn't say, you know, we'll provide you with education up to 12th grade. It doesn't say that. It says we'll provide you with education. So shouldn't our people be going to school, going to colleges for free?
That's right.
No matter what college they want to go into?
Yeah, their college,
no matter,
too.
You know, yeah, no matter where on this continent that they want to go to college, it should be paid for by the U.S. government.
Yeah, not only that, too. And when we go to these colleges, you know, it should be paid for. And now if you think about it, even if we did pay for college, we shouldn't have to pay to learn our own language, too, okay?
That's true.
That's scamming us. And that was, I believe that's a university. I think it was over in Washington State. I forget what state it was. I have to pull up the article again, where they were offering that actual course for free on their campus, actual indigenous language, you know? You can actually register online, too, if, you know, some tribes have their language on the website as well. You know, you have to learn it from the tribe, but it should be taught in school. And, you know, just like over, I believe, where is it, New Zealand? They're starting to teach the original language in their schools, too, by the way. And, you know, the United States has started doing that as well in their own school system, start teaching the indigenous language instead of trying to make it extinct with the colonial English.
I'm
still there.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to get my brother Noel to jump on the phone. I wanted to talk with him. He says I just got a text message from him. He's following. I wish you would call in, buddy, because I'd love listening to your take on this on paper genocide. I wanted to touch base on these issues of having a CDIB or being, you know, enrolled and having your livestock number.
Yeah, no kidding.
And he's the one I was talking about earlier that's been doing a lot of studying on DNA and researching his own family and people that he's actually, you know, actually through DNA related to. And then, you know, him not having an enrollment card and the issues that's causing him. Because it's like that, I'm sure he's not the only one that this causes issues with. It causes issues with a lot of people that, you know, have traced their family heritage and you know, find their family members on rolls, but for some reason they're being denied enrollment in their tribe. And then they go through financial hardships where if they were enrolled, they wouldn't be going through hardships, especially when it comes to, you know, employment, employment within the tribe, employment. And believe me, I know quite a few people who have a very, very good mindset.
What phone number has your brother? Is it 520 area code?
That's Arizona. Yes, I believe it is.
Yeah, bring him on.
Is it him? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll open his line. Hey, he's on.
Noel, you there?
Hey, brother, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
All right.
This is my brother, Noel. He's,
hey, Noel.
Taj Johnny.
And,
I've known him for a very long time. He's stood side by side with me down at the Cleveland baseball field, you know, demonstrating against the baseball team and the name and logo. And actually, that's where I met him. It's almost 30 years now that we've known each other. So I wanted to get your take on. You know, these CDIBs and it being enrolled, and because we have a lot of discussions over the years about things like this, and everybody, this guy, he's amazing. His knowledge is just phenomenal.
Well, brother, you're too kind. I'll just chime in my two cents. I can talk about what I've learned and what I've experienced. And I'll just begin by saying a few things about what I've learned, because I believe it's bigger than me. This is, I'm just one little guy, and there's at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of brothers and sisters in my situation. We are real, legitimate, by blood, Native people. But we are disenfranchised, and it's for a variety of reasons. Let me first start by giving a definition of what is an American Indian, because in my research, I've found over 300 definitions by the U.S. government. But I'll give you my favorite. It actually comes from the Census Bureau. And I used to carry it around my wallet, so you'll forgive me, but I actually memorized it. But here goes. An American Indian is a person who has descended from the original inhabitants and who maintains cultural identification through tribal recognition and or community recognition. So that to me is complete. We begin with, you're not a native if you're not descended from the original inhabitants of these this place. And second of all, it emphasizes that all-important issue about maintaining your culture and your tribal affiliation or community recognition. We know who we are. I can't show up on anyone else's reservation and claim to be whatever. It wouldn't take a half an hour for people to figure out I'm not related to anyone there and I don't know anything about what I'm talking about. We act as if some kind of fraud is going to be perpetrated. That's just not true. You're not going to fool. If you show up tomorrow in my community, you're not going to fool anybody. We don't know who you are. We don't know your relatives. We don't know your anything. So we know who we are, and we recognize people who are legitimately members of our community. Now, that brings up the second point, which is that sovereignty. In other words, the country of Greece does not decide who is an Italian. The country of Italy decides who's an Italian. If we use the CDIB, the Certificate of Indian Blood, then we are using the criteria of the United States government. That's just a fact. If we choose to do that, we are undermining, if not completely and entirely eroding, our sovereignty. The only people who can decide who are members of that community or citizens of that community or tribe, nation, however you want to frame it, are the people themselves. You cannot have an outside agency dictate to you who are your citizens. Now, let me just dive in for a second and touch a couple things about some of the damage done to American Indian people by the card. First, understand something. It comes from the Dawes rules. And please understand this. I'm not trying to tell you something that you must believe. I'm just trying to share with you the facts as I believe I have discovered them to be. Feel free to push back, argue, do your own research, come to your own conclusions. I'm not telling anybody what to believe. I'm telling what I believe, what I've concluded based on my research. In my research, anyone who's enrolled goes back to an original enrollee. Well, where do you look? You look at all these different roles, but the main identification comes from the Dawes rolls. In my research, I found that the Dawes Commission interviewed over 250,000 applicants. They approved just around 100,000. So think of it, right off the bat, the people who did have the courage, because you know it took a great deal of courage to go in after as Phil mentioned, all the treaties have been broken over and over, and there's no reason to trust the white man whatsoever. And yet you're asked to go in one more time and you know, have your family signed up. So my own grandmother, I'm on my Choctaw side, it's actually my great-grandmother, went in, and she applied with her four children and her husband, and she was denied. And I've got the transcripts from the application. And I'll go back up a second. I want to stick to I'll break into my story later, but if anyone's interested. But anyways, the main thing to know is more than half of all applicants were denied. Now think about how many people are the descendants of the 150,000 applicants who were denied. That's who's running around America today unenrolled and should be enrolled. It all comes down to money, right? It's just like anything. Wars, it's all economics. People might say, oh, it's religion, but that's just the justification. The real reason and motivation is to covet and steal your neighbor's resources. And that's what they did here. They stole our resources. So as Phil correctly points out, they're still ours. If your grandpa came over and stole my grandpa's Corvette, and I see you driving around in the street on it, is it yours? Hell no. It's mine. But when it comes to paper genocide, which is what it is, the Dawes Commission themselves killed 150,000 Indians with the pen. And just like my great-grandma said, no. In her case, she already lived on the Choctaw Reservation in Mississippi, already had land that was allotted for Choctaw Indians. Her, in the transcript, she describes her parents, her grandparents, as being Choctaw. But the Indian agent, and she brings in witnesses and relatives, all kinds of things. The Indian agent presses her. Now, this is like in the late 1800s. He wants documentation. He wants her to provide documentation because in the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek, that's the first Choctaw treaty in the 1840s, and there begin the Trail of Tears and the removal. And what they did at that time was they asked anyone who's a Choctaw to come in and register with the Indian agent. And so what they asked my great-grandma for was documentation proving that her grandfather had registered. What bullshit, right? And this woman didn't even read or write. And she supposedly has paperwork from 50 years before she was born, you know? So, like, it goes on, and they make the whole thing impossible for her. But in the end, the actual justification he gives is he says that she doesn't look Indian enough. She has dark hair, dark eyes, dark skin, but he says her features are similar to white. And that's actually the reason my entire family has been disenfranchised to this day. My son, you know, I didn't go to college for free or anything. So I can't be enrolled today. I've lost job opportunities. I'll just give you one example. When I was a young man, I had to put myself through school and being a janitor. I did a lot of Indian art shows and made friends with a guy named Truman Lowe, Winnebago, Ho-Chunk artist, and he at that time was a director at the Native American Museum in the mall in Washington at the Smithsonian, and he offered me a job, but I had to have my card. And so, obviously, I didn't get the job. That's just one job. You can imagine if anybody, any one of us, somebody gave you a job working at the Native Museum of Smithsonian, how that would change, alter the whole course of the rest of your life. So many, many examples I could give you like that where my life didn't take a turn for the better, and I missed opportunities because of the paper genocide. So what they did to my great-grandma, it just keeps hurting generation after generation after generation. They don't need to kill us with bullets. They just do it with a pen and paper. And the saddest part of it all, and I'll take a breath for a minute. Sorry, fellas. I don't get out much. So I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. But the saddest part of it all is that we do it to each other, right? So I said to my, I have a dear friend here. He's Yaki. I live out in Arizona now. But we had this discussion, I won't go all into it, but I said to him, I said, you know, what would be the worst thing? Like, what would be worse than a white man killing a Yaki or any Indian? And, you know, but let's just use examples of Yaki. He said, I don't know what. I said, a Yaki. And that's what I'm saying is the most heartbreaking, saddest thing of it all is our people are keeping us out. So when I talk to elders, and, you know, I used to, when I was younger, I got an education, and I used to be a teacher, and I taught on reservations and stuff like that. But I talked to elders about this issue for decades. I've talked to elders and people of all ages, young people about it. And, you know, when I was teaching on the Navajo reservation, for example, there were Navajos registered who had blonde hair and blue eyes. We got to face reality, man. We're living in a time where we're mixed, and we need to embrace that. We have this bizarro racism that's unique to America like this. If you are one drop black, you're black, right? But guess what? If you're native and you're one drop white, you're white. It's like that. We treat anybody who's mixed as if they're a little less than, and it's just heartbreakingly cruel. And I don't believe it's the way our ancestors did. There's a lot of evidence to suggest the opposite. There were no orphans. You know, we took care of our members of our community. And in fact, there's even evidence that, you know, how we treated outsiders. As I said, I'm part Choctaw, and we have, we took in runaway slaves. We made them part of our community. Some even rose to leadership positions. So we meant it. It wasn't symbolic. We meant it. You're part of us now. So this is the opposite of our traditional ways. And what's heartbreaking is that when I talk to these elders and a lot of people about getting rid of the card, they'll say to me things like, it's the only thing that protects us. That's how they feel. And they'll say, but honestly, that would make my piece of pie smaller. Yeah, but the thing is, that's not true. The facts are, you know how the United States government allocates funds to tribes? It's based on population. So the more of you, the more resources you're given. It's not less. That's what people think. They think, why if we're with Nolan, we're all going to get a smaller paycheck. No. That's not how it works. You're still going to get IHS and everything else. But so is Noel, and so is his son, and so is his son or daughter, whatever. And so Phil's right. It's not a work. This isn't just me. This is, I would say, hundreds of thousands. Remember, in the 1800s, 150,000 Indians shut out by just the Dawes Commission. And it's not like everybody showed up to the Dawes Commission, right? So I think it'd be fair to say probably 500,000 natives never were registered. But let's just use their numbers, 150,000 never registered. So what would their descendants be today? At least a quarter million. I think it's reasonable to say there's a quarter million breeds walking around like me who eat, breathe, think, live native, but the government's paper genocide has shut them down and they're Americans. They're not native. What an insult. What an insult. And like I said,
those numbers are just freaking amazing. You know, and you talk about the Dawes rolls. That's just one roll. You're not even mentioning the Miller rolls or the rolls for Fort Sill Apaches, the Muscalero Apaches, you know, or any of the other rolls that are listed.
I would say that every single tribe has multiple rolls. I mean, I think the Cherokee have like 10. I mean, it gets pretty ridiculous. And then you got to think about this. The Indian agent, okay, this is another serious issue that Indian people should, in my opinion, rally together to abolish the CDIB. This, for no other reason, this one, okay? Let's just pretend for 1 minute that just the people who are in, that's all we're going to care about. Let's just go with that for a second. So hear me out. First of all, those terms, half blood, half breed, full blood, those are terms from animal husbandry. That's how the vet describes an animal. That's how the government described Indians. Do you know that the BIA is under the BLM? Do you know, look it up today, even today, it says that the mission of the BLM is to manage the forest and the animals of the forest. So that's how they think of us, legally. And that's how they look down on us. The worst part is us doing it to each other, right? So when... Well, first of all, I'd say we shouldn't use those terms. But any Indian person within sound of my voice has had this experience I'm about to describe, I guarantee. I have had it many times in my lifetime. I've met Native people, and because of the card requirements, they have been disenfranchised in more than one way. So, for example, I've met full bloods, using their terminology. They had a mom who's Cheyenne and a dad who's Navajo. And guess what? They can't be in both tribes. So guess what? They have to pick one. Okay? So this particular person went with the Navajo. Okay, whatever, great. But guess what? They're listed as a half. That's right. They're listed as a half. They're 100% native, but they're listed as a half. That means their kid, if they, you know, that would happen, God forbid, marry a white woman, marry a black woman, marry an Asian woman, marry whatever, but that kid is going to be a quarter. And their kid will be out. When I was in graduate school here at the University of Arizona, I was president of the American Indian graduate. Anyways, never mind. But a woman I worked with, she was from a local tribe. Her granddaughter was, her daughter was a quarter. So her granddaughter was going to be not eligible for enrollment. And she flat out told me, because her sister worked in the enrollment division, they went in and just fudged the paperwork. And they bumped everybody's blood quantum up so the granddaughter could be a quarter and be enrolled in the tribe and eligible for benefits. Now, what's wrong with that picture? Hey, I don't blame her, but is that what you got to do to save your kid? No. We got to fix that system. And the only way to fix it, because they'll never do it. I believe every tribe... I'm going to probably get in hot water for this, but I think every tribe should do something like the Haudenosaunee. They issue their own identification, and they close their borders Because, look, like, for example, when I taught on the res in the Navajo country one day, I was having a dinner or this big picnic thingy. Anyways, talking to the superintendent, he's Navajo, and I told him, I said, you know, how come I see the highway patrol out here? Like, you guys got your own police force. Why don't you just, like, tell those guys to piss off, you know? And he said, well, we made a deal that, you know, the state maintains the highways. And since they maintain the highways, they're allowed to have their law enforcement go up and down our roads. Well, call me crazy, but in my opinion, figure out how to patch the potholes yourself and tell the fuckers to fuck off. This is your country. Set up a toll booth. Charge them the fucking fee. I'm sorry. I forget I'm on the TV or radio. But, you know, charge them a toll. Actually be a sovereign nation. So you issue your own ID of who is a member of your community. You set your own criteria for who is a member of your community. You know, actually be sovereign. Take control. So I guess, you know, I spent some time with Phil and AIM, and I kind of have my own, I guess people would describe as radical ideas. But, you know, we stopped a telescope from being built down here in a place in a canyon called Montosa Canyon. And the Smithsonian was wanting to build a telescope, and we were successful in our protest and getting them to cease and desist and go elsewhere. So, anyways, I could tell more stories about me personally and what's happened and how it hurt me and my family and my so many relatives, but it's the big picture I really think about, that what's in the future. And I'll finish by saying this. When I was in grad school at U of A, so this goes back to the 90s, I'm getting old, but there was an article, someone could look it up. It was from Oklahoma University, and this guy, I believe his name was Elijah Mahota, and he was the last full-blood Claw Indian. And so there are other members of the tribe, but he was the last full one. So what they did was they calculated the rate of full-bloods on the reservation according to the U.S. Census. And in the 40s, it was like 80%, but by the 90s, it was like 40%. And they just did the math, and they said, well, I think it was by 2050, there was going to be no full-bloods left. So when people like me say, look, this is about genocide, and other people are like, oh, you're so dramatic. No, it really is. It really is about the extinction of our people to play along with their rules, their guidelines. It means the death of all of us. So I believe the big picture, there's no more grave issue that faces Native America today. American Indians, for once, like the tribes got to unite, like Tecumseh tried to do, you know? We got to unite. And we, each one of us, take our sovereignty back. And as far as I'm concerned, because I'm a dislocated, disenfranchised Native person, like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of others, I would say the first thing to do is welcome us back. Don't lock us out. It's, in my opinion, cruel and unusual punishment. Don't act like the white man. That's not our traditional way. my people need to welcome me back, and every other lost orphan out there. I already know my history, but I've had certified genealogies, I've had DNA, I've got every possible thing. Last time the Choctaw chief comes out to Phoenix once a year, they do a tribal council. Anyways, I went up there, I've been a few times, but a few years ago was the last time I went, and I asked the chief at that time, I was like, look, man, my family's born and died on the Choctaw Reservation. They're buried in the Choctaw Cemetery. You don't bury white people there, okay? I've got all the paperwork. Here's my DNA. On and on and on. But guess what? He said, my hands are tied. Why? Because you're not in control. Because the tribal council doesn't call the shots. That's why. Because the U.S. government calls the shots. And the U.S. government gave that tribal agent the authority to tell my great-grandmother, well, you got dark hair, dark skin, and dark eyes, but I just don't know. You might be white. So, and you got to remember this, too. My grandmother, her land at that time was over 1,000 acres in Mississippi. That's how much they stole. You know, it was some white man moved in right then and took that land. You know it wasn't. You know it didn't go to some other Choctaw, right?
Yeah.
So these Indian agents, these guys, most of them were missionaries. That makes it worse in my book. And then they're not doing anything scientific, right? Like, okay, if I would say to the tribes today, hey, you know what? You should take DNA because it's science. It proves. It's a fact. The Indian agent who decided your ancestor was a half-breed, there's nothing scientific about that. That idiot didn't have a clue. He was just guessing, you know, and he was trying his best to disenfranchise every Indian he could. Think about it. My great-grandmother loses over 1,000 acres, and her four children have to hightail to Oklahoma with nothing because an Indian agent says, you're not native. And when she gets to Oklahoma with all her kinfolk, she can't even register and get nothing. She gets nothing. No land in Oklahoma either, because they said no in Mississippi. And it just goes on and on and on. And there's just thousands. Yeah. I mean, anyways.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on the tribes getting together. You know, it's like we talked, I think it was last week or the week before, we were talking about the whole water issue and the Supreme Court with and how that it you know, they act like it only affects them, but like Wombly was saying, it doesn't just affect their tribe, it affects all tribes.
That's
when
right,
something like this happens. You know, and it is absolutely unfortunate. I mean, can you imagine, anybody out there, imagine this. You know, what was the number you gave me the other day about the percentage of natives on according to the census that are here? I don't know if you remember.
We were talking about that. I was just saying that the reason Native Americans or American Indians don't have political clout or power in the government or representation even in the state level or federal level is because a democracy is based on a majority, right? So the majority, you know, they talk a lot about protecting the minority, but the majority is who makes the rules. Okay. So American Indians, according to the Census Bureau, equals 4 to 6% of the entire U.S. population. And I was just saying to my brother Phil last night that, well, I don't care who you are. If you're the Amish, if you represent 4% of the American population, you don't have power. You don't have clout. You're not going to get your voice heard in the state government or the federal government. So we have to face that reality. That's why I say focus on sovereignty. Don't even waste your breath on changing America or the government. They're not going to change. They're still trying to kill us.
But here's the point, too. Can you imagine all the people that aren't registered, if they were then recognized, how many more millions of our people would have that voice, would be part of that
voice? Oh, my gosh. That's an excellent point, Phil. I hadn't even thought of that.
It would probably supersede the African-American vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because somebody Google it, but I'd have to say, just guesstimation, I think African American might be 20%, maybe 30. I don't think it's even 1 out of 4. But I bet you, if you included every breed like me, you'd have 25% of the population. Look, I just came across this thing the other day on this, the Mormons, but they are religiously zealous about genealogy, right? They have one of the better genealogy sites. If you're interested, FamilySearch.org. I'm sure as heck not Mormon, but you don't have to be. It's all free, but you can go there and check stuff out. But anyways, on their site, they said that if you were a white person and your family has been here since the early 1800s, that there was a 25% likelihood you have Native American ancestry. It's just, this is what I sort of alluded to earlier too, is we're so mixed. I mean, and think about this, Phil. We've talked about this before. What if they had a card and they said, oh, you're a Jew? Where's your card? Oh, you're African American. You're applying for the scholarship. Let me see your card. You know, so what African-American has to prove they're African-American? But we're the only group that is so targeted, and the reason is because of resources. So, you know, if they're just afraid they're going to have one more body at IHS and one more person in the seats at Harvard, if they let all these Indian people in. But I think you made the most powerful point, Phil. We would have a voice that we would have that political clout in this system of government that they have set up. We would be powerful.
Yeah.
I would guess, you know, and I agree with you too, by the way. I did want to say, I'm so glad you made the point. It's so important to say this business about the original sin, it's shameful. And it's not just Biden, it's 90% of the ignorant Americans. And look, I'm not even going to blame them for it, because, you know, when I was at OU, I was asked one time, I was doing Indian activism stuff. Anyways, this guy approached me, he says, hey, I teach a class for English as a second language, and it's all these foreigners, a lot of Asians and stuff, and we have this book reading by Thomas Sowell called Ethnic America, and it has all these different ethnicities in it, right? And we're trying to bring in, you know, like a rabbi when we talked about the Jews, and we did and he says, hey, can you come over? We're doing a thing on Native Americans. I said, sure. So the first thing I did was I asked for their textbook so I could look over what they're studying. I'm not even making this up. It was two pages, gets worse, one page was a photograph of those riders in Canyon de Chelly. You know, we've all seen it. Anyways,
yeah.
So they had one page in the book on American Indian. So, look, most folks are extremely ignorant, but I'm not even going to blame them. The system has been structured that way. I believe it's part of this racism. Like, remember, they say they're gonna make the Indians white. And that's what I said about the racism thing, the card thing. We all understand that with the boarding school thing. It's all about making Indians white, making Indians Americans, not Indians. So I think the education is the big part of it, and it's educating our people about what damage the card is actually causing and what is our traditional values versus accepting the dictates of the United States government and how we treat each in view and treat each other, our Indian relatives. And then
yeah. We
have to educate the white man, and we have to tell him, hey, buddy, there's no original sin of slavery here. If you want to get down to brass tacks, okay, well, let me just ask you this. What's worse, slavery or genocide? I think it's an obvious answer, don't you? So,
yeah.
Bad as slavery is, guess what? You didn't all try to eradicate you from the face of the earth. That was their mission, and it still is. So, but we got to start there. That's the original sin of the white man in on this continent. And just I'll just get this in real quick, sorry. But when we attack the white man or his religion. When I was young, I was very angry and I was very mean about it. Hopefully I'm being respectful now, but I want to tell everyone, look, what I've understood now, I'm almost 60 years old now. What I understand now is that I don't want to disrespect my relatives. I've sat in a lot of teepee meetings, a lot of, you know, Native American church meetings, a lot of sweats where elders are practicing Christianity. And if I dog Christianity, really, I'm dogging those elders. That's not the traditional way, okay? No matter what I feel, I should be respectful of my relatives. I'm not going to argue with them about God. Okay? And with, when I talk about white people and the sins of the white people, hey, I'm part white. I know, you probably know, I was, you know, a powwow drummer for a number of years, even with Phil, back in the day. But out here in Tucson, we had a little drum, medicine arts singers. And anyways, one of my dear brothers, he, on his card, says he's a full-blooded Crow, and I always thought he was. And then one day he told me he had a great-grandfather who was German. But, you know, you'd never know to look at him, and you would never know if you checked his papers, you know. But I'm just saying, look, man, a lot of us are mixed. Some of us are mixed, and we don't even know we're mixed. So, you know, I think we got to be careful how we comb things out. Like the other day, I got into a discussion about shamanism and stuff, and this, you know, and this guy was, you know, I agree. We don't want white people running around pretending to be Indians and stuff. But here's my example of how you could be respectful. So if I went to Africa and I hung out with the Bushmen in Kenya and they gave me a Bushman name, you know, and then next month I come back and I'm giving a talk at the bookstore and I'm selling a book and I'm going to give everybody an African name after the talk for $10 and I refer to myself by this African name and I'm wearing my kente cloth or whatever, that's frickin' bullshit, right? But if I took the same trip And I came back, and I'd given a talk at the bookstore. And I said, hey, I'm Noel, and, you know, I grew up here. And I told the truth about everything. And I said, hey, you know, I just happened to take this trip. I happened to hang out with these people, and I thought they were really cool. And what they said was fascinating, and I just wanted to show you some slides and talk about my experience. That would be totally respectful, right? So you can do it. So white people have news for you. You can show up at our ceremonies, and you can be respectful. You don't have to have an Indian name and run off and say you're a shaman tomorrow.
Well, I wish we could go on longer. We got 4 minutes left to the show. And,
thank you for putting up with me.
Yeah, no, I've been waiting to get you on the show, and I'm glad you were on Facebook and I could get you on here. But we're going to have to wrap it up. So if there's Wayne, you got any last words, Wayne?
Yeah, thanks all for coming on. And, you know, Andrew Jackson, he addressed Congress back on December 8th, 1830, about the Indian Removal Act. He was trying to make everybody white back then, talking about get rid of our savage habits and make us civilized and interesting Christian community. But again, thank you for coming on the show. Philip, good job.
Thank you.
Thank you for everybody coming on the show, and thank you, Philip, for filling in for Wombly. It was a great show.
It's always an honor to fill in for him.
Yeah. And that's life. Things happen.
Yep, things definitely happen. So with that, I want to wish everybody, all our listeners out there, a very good evening, and hope you have a good rest of your weekend. And Doksha-ke.
Doksha-ke.
Yakoke.
You know, your son should die at all.
The show.